Welcome to the Procrastination Podcast with your host, Emma. This podcast is perfect for English learners who should be studying, you should be doing your English homework, but you just can't be bothered to do it. But you still want to be productive, and here I am. I am here for that. So this is episode one, this is a brand new podcast, and it's all about how to sound like a native English speaker. Controversial topic, I know, we're gonna pick it apart today. So I will be speaking as me, as Emma. I'm not going to be speaking as pronunciation with Emma, as teacher Emma, as, you know, some fake kind of online persona that us YouTubers kind of create. I'm just going to be myself here. And I want to talk about that in a future episode about, you know, the world of YouTube and what it can do to creators. And it's a real shame what the platform does. I mean, it's not the platform, actually. I'm going to save it for another episode, all right? Because I wouldn't say it's the platform necessarily. That's 100% to blame. But I will talk about that in the future. Anyway, as I said, this is a brand new podcast. I'd like to keep it informal and casual. Imagine that I'm your friend. We're in the pub. We're having a chat together. I've got my... what do I usually drink in pubs? My Pear Copperberg. Oh, I haven't been in a pub in so long. My Pear Copperberg cider. Not sponsored. So... I'm sitting here with my Pear Copperberg cider. You've got your favourite drink. Don't worry about the price. I've got you. I've paid for it. You don't even need to worry about it, okay? And we're just having a chat. That's what this podcast is. Just me and you having a chat. But a one-way chat, because you can't say anything back. Pretty much like how my conversations go in real life, actually. Just me chatting shit. And the other person just listening. So with that being said, actually, because I am being myself, there will be swearing in the episodes. Nothing too strong, don't worry, no five-star swear words here. I will try and keep it somewhat family-friendly. But I think swearing is a really important part of language. And I'll be honest, if a cluster of sounds together offends you, then... That's not really my problem, you know? It's just not the podcast for you. So, as I said, I'm going to be 100% myself, and I would like to keep it that way. And I will talk about why in a future podcast episode, because many teachers, influencers... I definitely wouldn't call myself an influencer. That's just fucking cringe. But, you know, if you... talk to some teachers, let's say, we'll keep English teaching relevant. They will talk about how their content has changed over the years, and yes, I would like to keep this podcast me focused, because I'm egocentric. I'm not egocentric, I'm really not. Actually, you know, I'm quite an introvert in real life, and a lot of people find that quite surprising. Because I do come across as an extrovert, but I'm like a fake extrovert. It's complicated. I did do a personality test. I can't remember which one I am, but I'm like one of those fake extroverts. And then you need to like go home and recharge because you've used all of your batteries and all of your energy on just like a 10-minute conversation. And that's me. Anyway... let's get started with the topic. We're about 5 minutes in. There was me thinking, you know what? I'm not going to have anything to talk about in this podcast episode. It's going to be over in about 10, 15 minutes, but give me a microphone, give me a camera. So if you're watching on YouTube, hello. Audio listeners, hello as well. By the way, you can hear my stomach. See, usually... when I'm doing my pronunciation with Emma videos, if my stomach starts rumbling, I edit it out. So I stop filming for a moment. I let my belly do its rumbles, do its rumbling. And then I'll continue recording because I want to keep it professional over there. somewhat professional. But over here, we're just going to let the belly rumble. We're going to let it rumble, okay? If your belly's rumbling too, go get some snacks. It's all right. It's okay. I won't judge. I would eat snacks on this podcast too if it didn't create the mouth noises. Anyway, we're 5.5 minutes in and I've said absolutely nothing about the topic. So, the topic today. How to sound like a native English speaker. I have so much to say on this topic. I've been scouring the internet far and wide. Blogs, YouTube, videos, podcasts, everywhere where a learner of English may come across some material, some content, let's call it, that has the title of How to Sound Like a Native English Speaker. So, let's talk about some of the things that people mention and why I think most of them are bullshit. Okay? Let's see how this goes. The first episode of this podcast, I may get cancelled. There'll be people on Twitter. Actually, I've quit Twitter, so on Instagram. I'll just block you. I won't even read it anyway. I won't even block. I'll just restrict the comments. And then people will think that I'm reading their comments, but actually I'm not. It's a great feature on Instagram where you can restrict comments. Anyway, still, nearly 7 minutes in, not got to the topic. I have verbal diarrhea. So, one of the things that I came across repeatedly is using lots of idioms. Apparently, if you use lots of idioms when you're speaking English, it makes you sound more native. And I've seen this countless times in videos. But the thing is, I was kind of analysing myself and how I speak. I mean, this is me personally, right? This is me personally. I'm not a representative of the English language and native speakers. I am only a representative of myself. But I don't use as many idioms as people may think. And when I listen to other native speakers, they don't use many idioms either. Idioms are not as common as people think. They are common, don't get me wrong, but they're not as common as what people think. Some people think as well, for example, if you take the IELTS exam, that if you use idioms, you're guaranteed a band 7, when actually that's absolute crap. It's not true. Because if you use an idiom in a very unnatural way, so if you use an idiom where we wouldn't really use an idiom, or you don't use it correctly, like it's in the wrong context or something, then it kind of goes against you in the exam. So it's the same in the real world as well. If you use an idiom that's not fit for that context, you're going to sound a little bit weird, you know, and people are going to be like, what is she saying? What is he saying? So my advice with idioms is, sure, use them, but definitely don't believe that you need to be throwing idioms everywhere when you're speaking to sound native, you know? The next one was using lots of slang. And I found this one interesting. Because slang is informal speech. And as well, slang can be, what's the word? It can only be used sometimes in certain areas. It's like geographically connected. Is that what I'm trying to say? Basically what I mean is that slang that's used in certain parts, for example, slang that's used in the UK, even more specifically, slang that's used in Bristol, where I'm living right now, compared to slang that's used in New York, in America, is very different. Slang as well can also kind of confuse people if they're not familiar with those terms. For example, in one lesson with a student of mine, she was studying at a school in Bristol, and she came across the word peng, like P-E-N-G, peng. Kind of like pen, but with a G on the end, right? Peng. And she said, oh yeah, all the people in my school, bear in mind she was 16 at the time, 15, 16 at the time. And she said, oh, what's this word peng? Some of my classmates are using the word peng. What's peng? So actually, I've got no idea. And I consider myself quite a young person. So for her to be like, what does the slang word mean? And I just have no idea. I felt a bit old. So imagine if she said to me, peng, by the way, is like another word for attractive, fit, sexy, let's say. Let's say attractive, fit, okay? I would say, oh, he's fit. He's well fit, yeah? That would be the slang that I would use from my generation. While her generation, 10 years younger, uses peng. And I found it quite interesting that if she had used that word with me, bear in mind she wasn't a native English speaker, I am a native English speaker, imagine she used the word peng and I didn't know, does that make me non-native? And this as well brings us the question of what makes a native speaker a native speaker. By the way, if you can hear the ambulance, I do apologise. You're going to hear a lot of them. It's become like a trademark of mine to have ambulances in the background of my videos. Again, on my Pronunciation with Emma channel, I used to try and edit out the noise. I put music over. But now I'm just like, you know what? Doesn't even matter. Doesn't matter. It's part of the brand. It's part of the brand now. So yeah, what makes a native English speaker? Is it using lots of idioms? Is it using lots of slang? Because I didn't know what peng meant. Does that make me non-native? Well, you would say no. Emma, of course you're a native speaker because XYZ, da 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 da. Everyone has this definition of like what's a native speaker in their head and what does a native speaker sound like. What's also interesting is I come across a lot of posts, particularly on Instagram. Oh my goodness, I see these kinds of things on Instagram all the time. And they're posts that will basically have these two lists. And it, on the left-hand side, it will say basic English. And then on the right-hand side, it will have like an arrow. And then it will have on the right-hand side, something like what natives really say. And it will be some ridiculous word that even I've never heard of. I mean, does that then make me non-native if I don't know what these words are? To be a native, should I know what every single word means? This is something as well that pisses me off from time to time, is that I'll come across a word that I don't know, maybe in a lesson, or not so much in a lesson, but maybe during like a stream or in a comment or something like that, or DMs, and people will ask me, Emma, what's this word? Da 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 da. Even though people can literally use a dictionary, they still DM me with these things. And I'll say, oh, sorry, I don't know that word. Especially if it's during a live stream, because I can't really look it up then. But I will say, oh, I don't know that word. They're like, what? But you're a native speaker. You should know this word. I know this word. And I'm Spanish. And it's like, well done. Would you like a fucking medal? Like, there are over 4 million words in English. How am I meant to know all of them? So because you've literally translated a word from Spanish into English and you've found some equivalent that we never actually use because maybe we use another word that's way more common, or it's for a very specific context. You know, if you work in a medical context and you ask me about medical terms, I don't know. My medical terminology stops at plaster, injection, x-ray. That's the extent of my vocabulary when it comes to medical terms, you know? I don't know them all. No doubt some people know them way more than me and they're considered non-native English speakers. Another thing, now this is really, really, really the big one. This is the big'un, is changing your accent to sound native. Woo-hoo-hoo, boy, that is opening a can of worms, isn't it? Changing your accent. So let's imagine you're an Italian and you're learning English. You will find many videos that tell, and blog posts and websites or whatever, that tell you, you need to change your accent to sound native. Like, you can make all the grammar mistakes in the world. You can fuck up all your tenses. It doesn't matter. But you know what? If you sound like the queen, then all's good, you know? But I want to talk about this for a moment. By a moment, I probably mean another 5-minute rant. But accent is not as important as what people think. Pronunciation really is important. And you're probably thinking, well, Emma, what's the difference between accent and pronunciation? And I'll be honest, they do go hand in hand. Like, accent and pronunciation do go together. The way I pronounce something is influenced by my accent. So when I teach pronunciation in my lessons or on my Pronunciation with Emma YouTube channel, the way that I pronounce those words is influenced by my accent. Another ambulance. Do excuse it. But which accent you learn is not important. What's important is that you're pronouncing the words in a clear way so that people can understand you. Let's imagine, you know, if you're still confused by this point, let's imagine I say to you, oh, can you pass me that pen on the table? And you look, so what? That pen there, can you pass me the pen on the table, please? The table? What's a table? Right, the table? You know, the table in front of you? What's wrong with you? The table! Ah, you mean the table. So here, in this context, the person has mispronounced the word table. There's a table, okay? I've never heard anyone say table. Maybe some people have. If you say table, now you know it's table. But in that context, it has caused confusion. Let's imagine that I am an English learner and I have problems with the dark L. So I say something like table. I know that Portuguese speakers, particularly Brazilians, looking at you Brazilians, they tend to have problems with the dark L at the end of words. So they will say things like fail, fall, table. They say it's like a W sound, which is fine. It's understandable. It's actually quite Cockney, which is a typical accent in London. And, you know, imagine I say the same thing. Can you pass me that pen on the table, please? On the table. Yeah, instead of table. Yeah, the other person may think, ah, yeah, table. Ah, they've just said it, you know, a little bit different. It's their accent. But it's okay. I understand it. I understand table. Or if I move stress around in a word, if I say, for example, looking around for inspiration, camera. Let's go with camera. If I say camera, oh, look at this beautiful camera that I've bought. Yeah, the camera settings are amazing. Oh, the quality of this camera. And you'll be like, what? Camera? It's not camera. It's camera. Or camera. So, your pronunciation is important. But your accent is not so important. It is not what makes you sound native. Another thing is that a lot of people believe that you must speak with, like, one particular accent. So, for example, I get so many messages saying things like, oh, I want to learn British English. I'm not going to listen to any American English ever. I'm just going to focus on British English. And I think, well, good for you. One, that's not good. Because you're going to really, what am I thinking of? Ah, you see? Even I'm stuck for words sometimes. It's definitely going to have a bad effect on your listening comprehension. Like, you're definitely going to have problems with understanding American accents in the future if you only limit yourself to one. And two, it doesn't really matter anyway. Like, it doesn't matter which accent you pick, I'll be very honest, because we can all understand each other. At the end of the day, I can understand someone from the States, from Canada, from the South of England, or from Scotland, or New Zealand, or South Africa, or wherever. We can all understand each other. Some accents are more difficult than others, but it's because I'm just not exposed to that accent enough, and you need to expose yourself to those accents more. If I had problems with the Scottish accent, I would just listen to more Scottish TV shows or podcasts or whatever and get used to the accent. And English learners need to do the same. It's no different. Absolutely no different. So yeah, changing your accent. It doesn't necessarily make you native. Especially when people say things like, oh, you need to sound a particular way. You need to have this one accent and have no other influence from any other accent or your first language. Balls to that. Because I'm from Yorkshire. And my accent's quite mixed because I've been teaching for, over 13 years. Actually, no, not over 13. That's a lie. It will be 13 years this year, I think. And I've travelled quite a bit. My boyfriend is Spanish. So my accent has changed quite a lot. I also don't live in Yorkshire. I live in Bristol. So there are some times when I say something and it comes out a little bit Bristolian, you know? So it really, does that make me a non-native speaker because my accent is mixed? Ah, it's bullshit. When people tell you, oh, your accent is mixed, you don't sound like a native, send them to me. Send them to this podcast and get them to listen to it all the way through. Then I get the what's it called? Oh, it can't be ad revenue. On YouTube, yeah. I get the views. I get the listens. Oh, I've got to switch it from views to listens now. I get the listens. Some other things. So cutting syllables and sounds. That was a big one that came up. Does cutting syllables and sounds make you sound more native? No. But it is something that we use in fast speech. The next one, speaking really fast. This one came up a lot. Speak faster. Speak faster. Don't speak slowly. Don't hesitate. How many times have I hesitated during this podcast? I've lost count. Someone go back and count, please. The hesitations. It'll be a lot. The problem is, and I always talk about this with my private students and the ones on my Pronunciation Pro course, which is a course if you want to focus on your pronunciation. Not if you want to sound like a native. It's fine if you want to sound like a native, but my goal is just to help you with your understanding there and with your pronunciation being understood, being clearer. Anyway, shameless plug, moving on. What I tell my students is you don't have to speak fast in English to sound native. So what tends to happen is people have this belief that if they speak fast, so if they speak the speed of English as they speak their native language, they will sound super fluent. But actually, it's kind of bullshit. It's not true. English and its stress pattern is maybe different to the stress pattern in your native language. Hello, Editor Emma here. I'm going through this recording and I realise that past Emma made a mistake. Thai is not one of the fastest spoken languages. However, Japanese and Spanish are two of the fastest spoken languages. So every time I say Thai, please just close your ears. That was a mistake. I don't know where that came from. Sorry. Anyway, back to the podcast. So let's take, for example, a language like Thai or Japanese or Spanish. These are some of the fastest spoken languages in terms of syllables, per second. I think Japanese is the fastest and then Thai is like a close second. I don't remember, I'll be very honest, but I know that Thai, Japanese and Spanish are like at the top. And what tends to happen is that when people speak these languages as their native language, amongst many others, right? And then they speak English. They try to speak the speed of English as they do in their native language, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I'll tell you why. because English is one of the slowest spoken languages. German as well is also quite a slow spoken language in comparison to languages like Thai and Japanese. These are all quite slow spoken languages in terms of syllables per second. So use this to your advantage. You can speak slower. You do not have to speak quickly in order to sound like a native speaker. This is bullshit. You do not need to cut syllables. You do not need to cut sounds to sound native. These are features of rapid speech, but they're not necessary to sound native. I'm gonna leave that there. Another thing is stress and intonation. When I hear about students, you know, saying like, oh yeah, stress and intonation, it's important. I need to work on it. A lot of students think that these two terms are interchangeable, like they're synonymous. But stress and intonation are two completely different things. Stress are the words that you give emphasis to in a sentence. So if I say, for example, I went to the shop, it would be, I went to the shop. I went to the shop. So went and shop are stressed and the others are weak. Intonation is talking about more the pitch of your voice. So if we think of a question, I can say, did you go to the shop? Did you go to the shop? And it's a rising intonation. Did you go to the shop? Falling intonation. That's a fun thing. In English, intonation is very important. I would say, out of all the things that make you sound native, and that's really important for you to focus on, not to sound native, but to understand native speakers more, is definitely to focus on intonation. This is so important. It really is. Because I can say a sentence with different intonation, and in English, the meaning changes completely. The same with questions. This happens a lot in my lessons. Sometimes when I ask my students a question, I'll use a falling intonation. For example, did you do your homework? And because I'm using a falling intonation, my poor student doesn't know I'm actually asking them a question. Because they're so used to hearing questions with a rising intonation in their first language that they don't grasp that in English sometimes you can use a falling intonation. It's possible. I've done a video about it on YouTube as well, if you're curious. You can go and watch that. Question intonation, I think I called it. So yeah. The final thing that I want to talk about, because this podcast is getting on a little bit. I'd like to keep it to about, you know, 30 minutes, but I think my podcast episodes may end up going on to like 45 minutes. We'll see. We'll experiment. We'll see what the sweet spot is. The final one is something that many teachers don't talk about, and I found it very hard to find materials, content online, videos, these kinds of things, you know, lesson plans and stuff like that, textbooks. Talk about pragmatics. Now, I am a pragmatics nerd. You're probably thinking, what is pragmatics? Well, pragmatics is basically the underlying meaning of something that you're saying. Take, for example, you tell me, oh, I saw Bob last week. And I say, oh, interesting. Now, someone with low pragmatic competence, which isn't a bad thing, okay? Someone with low pragmatic competence might hear that and think, oh, Emma's interested. I'm going to tell her more about this. Okay. And they tell me more about how they met Bob. Okay. And what they spoke to about Bob. The fact that they went for a cheeky pint with Bob in the pub. Because pubs are open now. Woohoo. But someone with a high level of pragmatic competence may hear that and be like, oh, Emma's bored. Emma doesn't actually think it's interesting. And that is very interesting. Pragmatics is very interesting. It's not something people teach a lot. I have done some YouTube videos in the past about it, and I have kind of taught some pragmatics. If you're wondering like how I am a nerd about it, how I know about pragmatics, basically during my master's degree. So I did my master's degree in TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages. And for my final project, for my dissertation project, I did it on, oh, it's going to be nerdy, pragmatic competence and development in English language learners who are living and working in the UK. So basically, in English translated, it's looking at how people are kind of culturally competent. So when it comes to speaking a language, we all know that there are elements of culture integrated within the language. English is a very interesting language because you have variants such as English is a lingua franca, where this kind of doesn't come into play so much. But if you're talking about teaching English, let's say British English, you know, English from the UK, you're going to start incorporating bits of culture into that, right? So many people, if they go into a cafe in their country, in their native language, they would just say, a coffee, bring me a coffee, I want a coffee. But in the UK, if you say that to someone who's working in a cafe, they will they'll spit in your coffee, no doubt, because it's very rude. So you need to be careful. And this is why having a certain level of pragmatic competences is really, really important, because I've met people with very, very high levels of English, you know, C2 levels. They sound like native speakers, one could say, but their pragmatic competence is still rather low. It's an interesting topic. Maybe I can go into it one episode and kind of delve into, you know, what is pragmatics and more about my dissertation, because I know some of you nerds have asked about it before and asked, oh, Emma, what is pragmatics? How do I teach it? I'm a teacher. How do I teach about pragmatics? It's a very interesting, very under-researched area of English language teaching and linguistics. So yes. So those are pretty much all the points that I came across. Idioms, slang, using advanced vocabulary, changing your accent, using only one specific accent. You're not allowed to mix your accent, apparently, according to some people. Using connected speech, cutting syllables and sounds, speaking really quickly, stress and intonation, pragmatics and culture. There are so many things that make someone sound like a native English speaker, and I want to kind of dissect this a little bit and just ask you, well, why? Why do you want to sound like a native English speaker? Is it because someone told you that you need to sound like a native speaker? That's the final goal, isn't it? The final goal with language learning is to sound like a native speaker, right? Wrong. It's not. There are many people who are bilingual, trilingual, multilingual. They're competent in all the languages that they speak. But they maybe don't know many idioms or much slang. Maybe they're highly competent at being able to help patients in hospital because they're a doctor. They know all the vocabulary needed to be able to communicate effectively with a patient and then communicate with the nurses and other departments, give referrals and so on to other departments for this patient. Yet they probably struggle in a pub to have a conversation with someone. And I would be in the same situation, but vice versa. I mean, for me, I would probably struggle being in a medical environment, talking to patients and explaining, you know, their complicated process and ailments and stuff like that. But I can sit and talk to someone in a pub. Does that make me a non-native English speaker? Why is it then that we look at the other guy who's the doctor and because he can't have a conversation in a pub, he's seen as not competent? Do you know what I mean? This idea of like being competent is so subjective. This idea of what's the goal of language learning? Like, should we sound like a native English speaker? If for you the answer is yes, I'd like you to think why. I'd like you to think, well, I want to sound like a native English speaker because I really like pronunciation, I like phonetics, I really enjoy phonology, I analyze different accents and I find it genuinely interesting, and I would like to speak with an RP accent. That's a nice reason. But when someone says to me, I want to learn English and sound like a native English speaker because my teacher told me to. Well, if your teacher told you to jump off a fucking bridge, would you do it? You know? It's just not, it's not right. It's not right. And I'm going to leave it there. Because this podcast is getting closer to the 45 minute mark. So, my advice is, I'm going to leave this right to the end. So you lucky people who are listening now. The key to sounding like a native English speaker, I think that it's so subjective that it cannot truly be answered. Linguists, trained linguists who have studied their entire life, they've dedicated their life to this topic, cannot even agree on what makes a native English speaker. So, if linguists can't even agree, how can you? How can us normal people, because academics aren't normal apparently, but it's a joke. How can us normal non-academics agree on what sounds like a native English speaker? So long as you're learning English for the right reasons and you're wanting to achieve this goal of what you believe sounds like a native English speaker. What sounds like a native English speaker is so subjective. Some people listen to me and they think, Emma, but I understand you. I understand you way better than other native English speakers. You don't sound that native. Well, sorry, love, but I am. I can show you my birth certificate. You know, I can show you where I grew up. I can show you my parents. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to show you where I grew up either, because it's a horrible town. You don't want to go there. Because I was born in York, but then I moved to a small town in... Oh, this is a creaky chair. That's better. Sorry, audio listeners. And then I moved to another town when I was about 8. And I had to change my accent, actually. I had to change my accent to be able to fit in. Yeah. That's a story for another podcast episode. So, take this away after listening to this episode. Define what a native speaker is to you, because the definition is so subjective. Okay, it's not clear. Even linguists don't know how to define it. Some people may say, well, to me, an English speaker is where you grew up, where you were born. Well, let's imagine I was 5 years old, I was born in Italy, I stayed there until I was 5, my family moved to the UK, but I forgot most of my Italian. I can understand Italian, but I can speak English better. Does that make me non-native? Because I have an Italian passport, I was born in Italy, my parents are Italian, but I grew up from the age of 5 in the UK. Some would say, yeah, but you sound native. You have a London accent. Yeah, you're native. But am I? I was born in Italy. What about the people who believe that if you're born in another country, it makes you non-native? It's very subjective. So long as, my second point is, so long as your end goal is not one that's going to cause you frustration, anxiety, like, oh, I must sound like the Queen of England. No one sounds like the Queen of England. Only the Queen sounds like the Queen of England. So long as you choose a goal that's achievable, that you're happy with, that no one has pressured you to believe that you should do and achieve, no one has pressured you into believing that you should sound a certain way or speak a certain way. I mean, I still get comments now. Emma, why do you say past instead of past? Well, that's my accent. Deal with it. That's what you should say to people. It's my accent. Deal with it. And then send them to me. And I'll sort them out. I'll sort them out for you. I'm kidding. I won't. I'll just make them listen to the podcast. And then I'll get their views and listens. Anyway, that's the end of this podcast. It's the first episode. I've kept it chatty, informal, and I would like to do more episodes in the future. I have a long-ass list of episodes that I'd like to do in the future. Hopefully my camera won't die halfway through next time. It always seems to stop around the 30-minute mark. Not sure why. I have to go into my camera settings. I'll fix that. Maybe I won't. I probably won't. This is the procrastination podcast. And I do procrastinate quite a lot. I'm a hard worker, yet I do procrastinate quite a lot. Anyway, I'm talking shit. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you next episode. Bye-bye.